This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Ben Owens Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the 2013 Northwest Arkansas Education Report Card has numbers, plenty of numbers, relating to 17 public school districts in Washington and Benton counties. We'll talk to Gary Ritter, the director of the Office for Education Policy at the University of Arkansas, about that report.
And the three-person band The Room Outside plays inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. We'll also talk to Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com about the week's news and Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers about the upcoming weekend's entertainment opportunities.
First, Fayetteville-based SFC Fluidics has received a sizable federal grant to help further the company's work in diagnosing traumatic brain injury. The National Institute of Health awarded the company a $1.5 million Phase II research grant for advanced development of its brain trauma diagnostic platform. Sai Kumar is the Vice President of Research, Development, and Engineering for SFC Fluidics. And when Ozarks at Large spoke with him last year, he said that creating a portable system that could diagnose brain trauma in the field has significance both for the military and civilian applications.
It is an expressed and sustained need by the military, who is basically, I think they are the leaders of the world with respect to doing something about this problem, okay, is that there are lots of cases, both civilian and military population, of traumatic brain injury, okay, both in training and in real field type of situation. And you know already, you know, being a college town and focused on football, athletes, especially, you know, Ryan Mullet was there a few years ago, and he sustained a concussion. He was out of play for, a couple of games.
According to the company's website, the Phase I funding that SFC Fluidics received in 2009 for traumatic brain injury research resulted in a prototype bedside microanalysis instrument. And with Phase II funding secured, the company wants to integrate other clinically relevant features to the device, such as portability and real-time detection of biomarkers that indicate brain injury, in order to improve care of patients with severe brain injuries. The company is located in the Arkansas Research and Technology Park in South Fayetteville and is a portfolio company of Vic Technology Ventures Development.
Live racing season is scheduled to begin at Oaklawn Park in Hot Springs today, and Jennifer Hoyt, Media Relations Manager for Oaklawn, says there are some significant changes to wagering options.
The new things that are really exciting are our Oaklawn Anywhere. That is the ability to not only use your mobile phones, laptops, or tablets to wager from the track, but you can also open an account and wager from home if you are an Arkansas resident.
Despite some concerns, Hoyt says she doesn't expect betting from home or on the go to have an impact on attendance or revenue for local businesses.
Where we think this will really help improve our business is during our simulcast season, when people from Fayetteville and Fort Smith area don't normally travel to Oaklawn, but Oaklawn has always been a great tradition. We don't expect it to have any effect on our crowds during the live race meets.
Hoyt says attendance in the first 2 days of last year's opening was more than 30,000, and the same is expected this year. She notes corned beef sandwiches and Oaklawn tradition will be sold for just 50 cents on Saturday.
The 25th-ranked Arkansas women's basketball team last night added another conference loss to their season tally. Razorbacks lost to the Florida Gators in Gainesville 59-52. They now have a record of 1-2 in the SEC, 14-2 overall. Razorbacks return to Bud Walton Arena Sunday afternoon when they'll host Mississippi State.
Razorback student athletes collectively earned a 3.17 grade point average during the fall semester at the U of A. This marks the eighth consecutive semester that student athletes exceeded a 3-point GPA as a whole. 261 athletes in total achieved at least a B average, which is an increase of 20 athletes achieving the departmental honor roll when compared to the previous fall semester. Additionally, 45 athletes had a perfect 4-point grade point average for the semester. 14 of the U of A's 19 teams posted a team grade point average at or above 3.0, with men's golf posting the highest men's team GPA of 3.49, and women's golf had the highest women's team GPA with 3.71. However, the only revenue-generating sport that had a team GPA above 3.0 for the fall semester was men's basketball.
Cloudy tonight, slight chance of showers before midnight. Lows will be in the upper 20s in northwest Arkansas, around 33 for lows tonight in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and warmer. Highs around 52 in northwest Arkansas, near 60 for the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow afternoon. And for Saturday night, mostly clear, lows in the lower 30s. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers news, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. Michael, how are you on this wet and somewhat cold Friday?
Well, it is wet and cold. I'm doing well, and I apologize to you and your listeners in advance for my voice. It's coming and going this winter.
Well, I'll try to keep you from talking too much. Let's first talk about unemployment numbers that came out this week that showed a dip in unemployment for Fort Smith.
Yes, it's there's a, as always with some of these numbers, there's a good news and bad news component. But for the first time in 55 months, the rate dipped below 7% in the Fort Smith area. So, you know, that's a good sign. Now the issue is, though, that now the Fort Smith area has a long way to go to recover that workforce size and the labor force size of the number of employed that they had 6 and 7 years ago. So, for example, the size of the workforce was a little over 132,000 in November, but it was 140,000 in October 2007. So. And the number of employed in the area is down about 10,000 from its previous level. So, good news again for the Fort Smith metro area is maybe the area has reached bottom, but it's got a long way to go to get back to normal. In northwest Arkansas, it's a completely different picture. And I know I sound like a broken record, but it's just a great economy there. You've got a decline in the number of unemployed. The number of employed continues to grow, and the labor force there continues to grow as well. So in those three aspects of the labor market numbers, the Northwest Arkansas area is doing very well.
It's a new year, of course, and yesterday afternoon the City Wire had a report about some new leadership at the world's biggest retailer.
Yes, and probably, well, there are way too many for us to outline here, but I encourage your listeners to go to the CityWire and look at it. But it's no secret Doug McMillon, Walmart International CEO, is going to replace Mike Duke here February 1st. And, you know, when you have the guy at the top, when that domino falls, a lot of other dominoes fall, and that's what we saw yesterday. They've named a new senior vice president of marketing, for example, for Walmart U.S., a guy named Tony Rogers. And, you know, just all through, for example, and John Welling is going to be the new senior vice president, or will assume the role of senior vice president of operations for Walmart Canada. He was overseeing some operations in Japan. So I would hate to be the HR person at Walmart because, I mean, it is it's going to keep that person or persons busy for the next few months.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine there's more than one person in that department.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, maybe. Probably at least three.
Yes,
don't you think?
Yes. A story that we talked about in 2012 and 2013. Now we're going to talk about it in 2014. I'm sure there will be some conversation in 2015. The water park. The conversation between Sebastian County and the city of Fort Smith. There did seem to be kind of the removal of a logjam this week.
Yeah, a log jam, and Maybe that's what we named the water park, Bill, the log jam. You know, it's amazing, Kyle, the city of Clarksville and the city of Rogers were able to pass a vote, get voter approval, and build their facility in a relatively short order. Here we are several years later, and not only are we just now agreeing on what the water park's going to look like after it was promised as one thing to voters, but it's not, you know, it's not almost $3 million more in cost, and we're still changing features out at the last minute. So we'll see if they get this thing built. This has been like watching the Keystone Cops interact with the Three Stooges in a Charlie Chaplin scene. I mean, it's just about the time you think that it can't get any more silly or convoluted, it'll take that turn for you.
We are getting all the younger demographics here with references to Broken Record and Keystone Cops. I'll tell you that right now. Finally, as you and I talk, Arkansas still has a Lieutenant Governor, Mark Dar. This is, you know, the conversation is going back and forth. We've heard from Bruce Westerman that he thinks that an impeachment process is inevitable. I guess one of the questions you have seen some people ask, why does the state even need this office? Any thoughts about, you know, the developments in the Lieutenant Governor and Mark Dar over the past few days?
Well, that's a question that I've been asking for a long time, not only just with the Lieutenant Governor's office, but, you know, why do we need a Commissioner of State Lands? You know, really? Why can't those be some executive branch functions? But this Lieutenant Dar thing is amazing. You know, he was hit with an $11,000 fine. He's been... his actions have been sanctioned, you know, pretty heavily by two different groups, Legislative Audit and the Ethics Commission. It's no, I don't think it's any, there's no argument that he committed some really stupid things with numbers and with taxpayer funds. But why he's not leaving, you know, I think the closest we can get to subjection or to that answer is that he just needs the money. He's that broke, which is sad. But I think he's going to step down. I can't imagine he'll want to be the only elected official in Arkansas who faced impeachment. I think when push comes to shove, he'll step down. But this has sure been this is a gift that keeps on giving for the Arkansas Democratic Party. They have to love this.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire and will be resting his voice, I hope, over the next several days. Michael, get better, and we'll talk to you next week or the week after, depending on that voice, okay?
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Tyson Foods, headquartered in Springdale, has issued a letter to all its contract pork producers instructing them to adopt new animal welfare practices starting this year. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
In a major overhaul of its contract hog farm operations, Tyson Foods issued a set of new animal well-being recommendations for farmers to follow. The use of manual blunt force to euthanize sick or injured piglets is now prohibited. Medications must be used to mitigate pain associated with piglet castration and tail docking, and pregnant sows must be provided more space. Breeder pigs are confined for most of their lives to narrow metal gestation crates. Tyson also ordered video monitors to be placed in all facilities and for third-party farm audits to increase. Last autumn, Tyson terminated its contract with an Oklahoma swine producer after the animal rights group Mercy for Animals revealed alleged abuse based on graphic hidden camera footage. Executive Director Nathan Runkle.
Mercy for Animals investigator working at a Tyson pig factory farm documented a culture of animal cruelty and neglect, including workers viciously punching, kicking, and beating pigs, as well as cutting off the tails and ripping out the testicles of piglets without any painkillers, and mother pigs being locked inside of tiny maggot and feces-infested crates so small that the animals couldn't even turn around or lie down comfortably. On top of this, we found workers violently slamming baby piglets headfirst into the ground in oftentimes failed attempts to kill these animals. Many of these piglets suffered for an extended period of time with fractured skulls before finally dying.
Tyson Foods established an Office of Animal Well-Being more than a decade ago, which has slowly progressed. Tyson Foods spokesperson Gary Michelson declined talking on tape, but in a statement issued to media said the measures were an outgrowth of its Farm Check Animal Welfare Program, reflecting insight received from its advisory panel, including noted animal welfare advocate Temple Grandin, as well as from customers, farmers, and other industry. But Mercy for Animals' Nathan Runkle says the worst offender, gestation crates, are now banned in 9 states and throughout the European Union.
And the entire pork industry should be moving away from them. And Tyson is a key player in this industry. They're the second largest pork producer. So we hope that this announcement will reduce the suffering of millions of animals. And we hope that it's not just PR hogwash by Tyson and that they really give this announcement additional teeth by making all points mandatory rather than just recommendations, and that they do attach a timeline to the recommendation to phase out restrictive gestation crates.
Tyson Foods was founded in 1935 and is one of the world's largest processors and marketers of chicken, beef, and pork, with sales of more than $33 billion in 2012. It operates 9 pork plants that process more than 400,000 swine per week. Other pork producers, including Cargill, Smithfield, and Hormel, are slowly phasing out gestation crates. And dozens of fast food restaurants and retail grocers, including Burger King, McDonald's, Costco, and Safeway, are demanding cruelty-free pork from suppliers. But to date, Walmart, the world's largest retailer, has not. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On the Friday edition of the show, we'll hear music from Art Pepper and Herbie Hancock, Pat Martino, Duke Ellington, Keith Jarrett, and much more. Tune in this Friday at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
It is Friday, January 10th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm still thrilled to be out of the house.
I think a lot of folks are. There's been a lot of just being at home for the holidays and then with the weather.
Being stuck in.
Lots
I
of
love
cabin
the people
fever.
I work with and the people that I live with, but I'd like to see somebody else. So hi, guys. I'm really happy to see all of you out there. Too bad we can't beam you in.
I don't think the studio is big enough.
Well, that's a problem. But we can beam them into the Walton Arts Center tomorrow night.
Okay, that sounds fancy.
Because it's finally time for the William Shatner Show.
Finally. We've been talking about this for a while. You got to chat with him.
I did. And everybody said, oh, that's a bucket list interview. And I said, okay, so what are the questions you need to ask?
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I asked him was, what's on your bucket list?
Mm-hmm.
And he said he wants to go to Spain because he saw something on the Food Channel about it.
I appreciate that. When I travel, food is very important. It is very much a cornerstone of my traveling.
And he's working on a new kind of motorcycle. He's designing a motorcycle with a group in Chicago that he's going to drive from Chicago to New York or L.A. Keep in mind, he's like 84.
Either way, that's cool.
That's cool. And I asked him, aside from Captain Kirk, what he'd like to be remembered as. And he said he's a Rainer. I think we talked about this before. That it's a competition with horses.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him what other career he would have chosen if he had to be something other than an actor. And he said a professional lover, and he would have given classes. So if you want to find out more about William Shatner, he will be live on stage at the Walton Arts Center tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The show is called Shatner's World, We Just Live in It. And tickets start at $50. Plus this weekend, we were talking before we came on the air about being stuck in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opera this weekend about being stuck in an airport.
Do tell.
It's called Flight. And it came out in the 90s, debuted in 1998, inspired by the story of an Iranian refugee who landed in France, but he had visa problems and he could never leave the airport. So he stayed there for 18 years.
Oh.
Which is a lot worse than one night.
Yes, it is.
So should be either too close to home to be fun or great fun.
Okay.
7:30 tonight and 3 o'clock Sunday at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall at the University in Fayetteville. And tickets start at $18 at operafayetteville.org.
Do you know the language of the opera?
It is in English.
It's in English. Okay.
Yes. Now, here's an appropriately named event. It's a cabin fever reliever.
At Shiloh Museum.
Yes, Shiloh Museum. Collector's Day. They decided a while back that they really wanted to have their open house when people needed it worse.
Now is an excellent
time.
This
is a good time.
And the weather's supposed to be much warmer this weekend.
Yes.
So.
And then we'll have cool things like marbles and marble games and Civil War things and cornhusk dolls. And this is all 10 to 2 tomorrow. And they're having tours of the museum's collection storage area at 11, noon, and 1.
That's fun.
It's all free at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale, and you can find out more at 750-8165. Tomorrow night, if you're not going to see Shatner because you don't get sci-fi, Outside the Lines is playing at the Art Center of the Ozarks.
Oh, yes.
It's part of their new Main Street Music Night series. They have it in their downstairs gallery, so it's very intimate, and they serve some adult beverages, and you can listen to Emily Cates, Ed Nicholson, and Stan Diabin do their interesting, eclectic music.
They're fun.
Folk.
I'm not even going to even
gypsy
try.
Yeah,
you will enjoy it.
You'll enjoy it.
Yes.
7:30 tomorrow, and tickets are $16 for non-member adults. And if you want something completely different, Fun Bags Comedy Improv.
Yes.
With a musical guest.
Yes, they're having a Shannon Worst play this time.
It's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night at the Dixon Theater in Fayetteville. This is a new location for them.
Yes.
Do not go to the UARC Bowl. They will not be there.
No.
Go to the Dixon Theater.
The opposite end of the street.
Doors open at 7:15, show at 8 o'clock, and tickets are $7. So go do something, anything. Take me with you.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this month, the 2013 Northwest Arkansas Education Report Card was released. The document is compiled by the Office for Education Policy at the University of Arkansas in partnership with the Northwest Arkansas Council. It includes several pieces of information about 17 school districts in Benton and Washington counties, including graduation rates, standardized test results, and the demographic makeup of each district. Gary Ritter, the director of the Office for Education Policy at the U of A, says the 16-page report card contains tables and graphs with valuable information. But he advises readers of the report card should see the document's individual contents as part of the educational condition in Northwest Arkansas and not as the whole picture.
You don't want to just look at a single data point, a single point in time, as if that tells the entire story. Of course, it doesn't. I mean, even looking at a trend of data points, for example, I just pulled up the page in front of me and I'm looking at Elkins School District for a few years in a row, and you can see that there's some upward movement in math, for example, or literacy, et cetera. That is Elkins School District as a whole. If I worked for Elkins or was a parent in Elkins, I'd want to know, well, how about grade 5 or grade 6? And it might depend if I'm a parent of a middle schooler or an elementary schooler or a high schooler. So there's all sorts of things underpinning each of these figures. As we said earlier, I think the value is it's the data in one spot, and we can kind of pay attention to overall trends. And then for a parent or a stakeholder who wants to dig further, we provide links and ideas where they can go and really get into these data. But this is a starting point.
The overlooking this report, though, it seems that many of the important benchmark test results are students at the end of the year proficient in the subjects that are being tested. It does seem that overall there has been movement forward.
Overall, we see an upward trend in Northwest Arkansas. However, we also see an upward trend across the state, and this leads to concerns by some, and I think legitimate concerns, that upward trends in benchmark tests or standard state criterion-based standardized assessments are somewhat due to familiarity with the assessment. So to some extent, kids get more comfortable with the test. This is why parents of high schoolers will try to ensure that their kids take the ACT or the SAT a couple times. So what I think we see in the upward movement is, in some part, increased familiarity with the assessment, but certainly, I believe, increased understanding, knowledge, skills by our students. The tough part is sorting out how much of this is familiarity and how much of this is actual learning.
Is that possible to separate that out?
That's a great question. I think the best way to try and do that, you can't separate it out from here, I don't believe, but you can look at other measures that aren't as susceptible to improvements based on familiarity. So there's the NAEP, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is a federally mandated assessment that's given to a representative sample of kids every year or so. And it's a representative sample, so it's different students in different years. There's not test familiarity, but it's given to enough students so you can make judgments about the educational improvement of an entire state and even of some metro areas that are large enough across the country. According to the NAEP, we've also seen improvement over the past 10 years, the past 5 years or so. However, somewhat similar to these scores, our improvement has leveled off a bit.
There is an end-of-year exam taken by many students that tests proficiency in geometry, in algebra, in literacy, and biology. Geometry, algebra, and literacy have had decent to better numbers. For many of the school districts, for a majority of the school districts in Northwest Arkansas, biology, the proficiency numbers are very low. And that's almost across the board.
That is across the board. But the important thing to look at there is statewide, the biology numbers are also very low. Indeed, the biology test was introduced years after the other tests.
So going back to that perhaps familiarity.
Exactly. We are above the state average in biology, and some of our districts are quite good. A handful of districts have biology scores that look like their other scores, almost. Bentonville, for example, has 75%, 74% proficient or above in biology. However, some districts in our area have percentages around 37, 39%. It's a tough exam. Statewide, the passage rate for biology was only 44%, whereas the other subjects, 70, 80%.
I think the challenge here is for people who put together these sorts of reports to try to educate those of us who read them what we are and what we are not seeing. Because there's a knee-jerk thing, oh, if this district is only at 25 proficiency in biology and this one 74, does that mean the first school district that's lower is doing something incredibly not as well as the other district?
That's a great question. And as you were asking it, I thought, I'm not sure we've done it as well as we could. Each year we try and do it a little better. Part of our job is to try and take data and put it in a format that is accessible. Now you can see it. We also have to try to figure out a way to help parents make sense of it. And it's a challenge. It's not obvious what to do. If you have the answer, please tell me. I'd love to know. You raise an interesting question. What about a district that has apparently fantastic scores and another district that has apparently lousy scores? How do you make sense of that? Well, I think you want to pay attention to context. Everyone in this world who studies these figures, who lives in schools, who works in schools, understands that there are different challenges brought to the classroom by kids who are economically disadvantaged as compared to more affluent children. Doesn't mean, certainly shouldn't mean, we give up and say, oh, those children can't be taught. That would be silly, and if I thought that, I shouldn't be teaching. However, it is more challenging. So if you're looking at one district, let's say, that has a great number of affluent kids and we're at 80%, and the district down the road serving nearly all economically disadvantaged kids is at 70%, you might want to say, wow, that district down the road is doing a great job somehow with all the challenges they face, still getting nearly as many kids over the proficiency bar. All of that long-winded answer to say, I think you have to pay attention to context.
At the end of this report, there are comparisons to other regions, Chicago, Huntsville, Alabama. The reason for including that?
So one question we get when we put out the Northwest Arkansas report card gets at the idea of or the argument that, okay, you're doing great compared to the state of Arkansas, but I'm concerned that the state of Arkansas might not be a high enough bar. Let's say you're an employer hoping to draw people in from other areas of the country and they perhaps have a negative perception of the state overall. First of all, that negative perception is exaggerated. Statewide, we do roughly average on most educational figures. Nevertheless, if folks want to come in and consider living here and they're presented with data that say, well, we're some of the top districts in the state of Arkansas, that might not appear to be as much high praise as the parents might want when they're considering, you know, uplifting their whole family, uprooting their whole family and moving to Arkansas. Because this document was supported by the Northwest Arkansas Council, they care about the region, they care about folks in the region, they also care about businesses in the region being able to recruit potential employees. So this is a real concern for the Northwest Arkansas Council. How do recruits convince their families and spouses and whomever that it's a good idea to come and live in Northwest Arkansas? So our idea was to take one of our districts. We might do this differently in the future, but a district that's viewed by many as a high-achieving district, Bentonville, has very high numbers, high fractions of kids achieving at high levels on these exams, a decent graduation rate, and compare that district's results to districts across the country that look like either peer regions or competitor regions. So there, we looked at a district around Cincinnati where folks from Procter & Gamble might come. We took regions from which we might imagine employees recruiting potential employers. And you picked a relatively high-achieving school district from each of those regions and then laid them out against each other. And what we found was Bentonville was right in the mix of high-achieving school districts across the country.
You mentioned to put this in context. So if I'm a parent or a stakeholder and I'm looking at this report, because you don't get into the weeds with this report. That's one of the things I like about it, because it's something that if I'm not a PhD or an academic official, I can still understand the graphs and bars. But what is your advice for someone examining this report card, this 16, 17-page report card, and how to use it?
So if you don't want to get into the weeds, if you're like you
right.
You don't want to get into the weeds, you just like to know how we're doing roughly.
Right.
I think this tells a useful and important story. For example, if you aren't interested in getting in the weeds, to continue to use that phrase, you might have this belief that we have poor schools, we're not doing that great. Well, now you'd learn that there's a more nuanced view, that indeed some of our schools perform well above the state average. Our region as a whole performs well above the state average. You'd find out that if you pick an exemplar district, it performs as well as high-achieving districts from across the country. You'd learn that our smaller, more rural high schools have better graduation rates than the Big Five high schools. But the Big Five high schools have better test scores. You can learn a lot about the region just from looking at this overview. However, if you're looking at it as a parent from Springdale or Rogers or Decatur and you want to know how your district's doing, I would start here and look how our scores compare with nearby districts. But then I'd head to our website or others to dig in further and find out, what about the particular schools in Decatur? Which ones are doing particularly well? How are we serving kids in literacy as compared to math? Those sorts of things. So I think this can be viewed as a tip of the iceberg, and maybe that's all you're interested in. But if you want to look more, this can provide a nice starting point.
Gary Ritter is the director of the Office for Education Policy at the University of Arkansas. The OEP produced the just-released 2013 Northwest Arkansas Report Card in partnership with the Northwest Arkansas Council. The report can be found at officeforeducationpolicy.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Late last year, the three members of the Santa Fe-based band The Room Outside stopped in Fayetteville as they were touring in support for their first album. That self-titled release, available digitally, can be found at their Bandcamp page. While in Fayetteville, The Room Outside played a show at Maxine's Tap Room and also came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk to Katie Hendrickson. We'll hear some of that conversation in a moment, but here is one of the songs from that session, The Beauty's Play.
That's the band The Room Outside, recorded late last year inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. While here, Katie Hendrickson asked the three members of the band, Carrie Hopper, Roxanne Hopper, and Lauren Bienvue, about the do-it-yourself approach they have taken to recording and touring.
Well, we've had a lot of help from friends, including Will Courtney, and he recorded our entire album in his bedroom studio. For the tour, we have Tony, which is just a huge relief to have someone doing all that extra work, and we can just focus on figuring out how to get everything to fit in our small Honda.
So you're touring in a Honda.
A Honda Fit.
Wow.
And it fits in the Fit.
That's impressive. Fits in the Fit. And that, I mean, you have a full drum kit. You have how many amps? You have two amps?
Two amps. Actually, we have three amps. Yeah. We brought a little PA.
Uh-huh. And all our bags. So someone must be really a ninja at packing things or something.
Yeah, we're ninjas.
Yeah?
Yeah. And, and we don't mind cozy spaces.
I love to hear stories about musicians and when they connected early on with music.
Yeah.
I think music was a huge part of our family and our, you know, as with every family, but there are certain things that, like, were really in our family, like listening to mariachi music with all of our aunts. Like that was one of the things. But I can think of one time that I was really moved as a small child going to hear Peter and the Wolf.
My earliest memory would be back in elementary school. There was pretty minimal public school music programs. So my mom started coming in and playing music on the guitar and singing. And being like a first or second grader, I wasn't too happy. She was there in front of all my friends telling us what to do.
I remember watching the old Mickey Mouse Club, and there was Annette, somebody.
Mm-hmm. From the cello.
I haven't listened to her since then, but I remember her voice back then inspired me, and then I remember singing in the bathtub and feel like, there's something special here, and I like this.
Yeah. I love to hear stories behind songs. Sometimes people have elaborate stories, and sometimes songs just kind of come out on their own and no one has anything to say about it because that's the song and that's the communication form. So I'm just wondering if there's one of the songs you've played, if there's a special story attached to one of them, maybe.
Sure. The Beauty's Play is a song I wrote about a friend of ours who's now in his 80s, has Alzheimer's. And the first lyrics are, words are leaving me wanting more. And so he's losing his mastery over words, but coming into this new spiritual place. So that song's about that. And The Room Outside is our self-titled song. That song is actually about living in New York. And The Room Outside, in that context, it's about the possibilities that are in New York, York City, in the world, and just feeling, you know, every door opens to the room outside.
Tide, one drop at a time.
The three-member band The Room Outside is based in Santa Fe, and their self-titled album is available at theroomoutside.bandcamp.com. They played Maxine's Tap Room in downtown Fayetteville late last year and also talked to Katie Hendrickson at KUAF.
And we'll hear one more song from them. It's titled Halo. The band says it's inspired by the move to Santa Fe and the loneliness that can accompany a life in a new city, as well as the spiritual connection that can be found in that very same new city.
Laurie Hulse Anderson writes books rich with stories of war and loss, and she writes them for young adult readers. How does she put their view of the world into her books?
I have this theory that adolescence is a repeated experience. You go through a second adolescence, sadly, I think, when you hit your middle age.
Laurie Hulse Anderson, Saturday and Weekend Edition from NPR News.
That's tomorrow from 7 to 9 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Greenland.
Greenland. It's not very green outside today.
It was green last night.
It was green last night. That was interesting.
At least in over Fayetteville for a while it was green.
Yes, I was in Rogers and didn't see it, but I did see plenty of it on Twitter.
Okay, so I thought, because I was driving down Lafayette in Fayetteville, and I looked up, and I just heard on NPR News that a solar flare was going to push the Northern Lights further south than is usual.
Right.
Into Iowa, Colorado.
Okay.
And I look up, and there's this green hue.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I can't believe the Northern Lights are appearing over northwest Arkansas.
Sure.
So I whip into a parking lot, and there are a couple other people out there, and we're all looking. One woman to my left, I have to admit, was very skeptical.
Sure.
She said, I don't think they'd come in. I said, but the solar flare, and a couple of years ago, they did appear in northwest Arkansas. We didn't see them because it was too cloudy.
Mm-hmm.
This other woman and I, we were convinced.
Yes.
And then I kept driving down Lafayette. And there were so many cars pulled over and people out with cameras, people with tripods and cameras. Huh. So I was like, okay, it has to be.
I'm so sad that I must have just missed this when I left the office and headed home. Very sad because it was not green when I left work yesterday. So,
well, long story short, it was not the Northern Lights.
No.
It was the massive scoreboard, Jumbotron at Reynolds Razorback Stadium was for some reason completely green. And it was lighting up everything.
Yes. A friend of mine who lives across the street there from the stadium had a picture of it. So I saw that it was the stadium. And he said that they often turn the lights on during the winter to make sure things are still working and kind of just, I guess, general upkeep, if you will. And I guess because of the clouds, it kind of...
Well, it was this perfect storm of an, I assume, unintentional practical joke.
Right.
Because you had the low clouds, which kind of bounced it all back.
And so it kind of, like... made it bigger, made it larger.
Right. And then you had this phenomenon of the solar flare and a lot of people aware of it. So I eventually got to the stadium to confirm. It was
magnified.
Just this,
that's the word I want. Magnified the greenness. And so you guys did have a green sky. It made for some fun pictures. So even though it wasn't the Northern Lights, it was still, I guess you'd call them Western Lights on the western side of town.
The Western, yes, you're right. The Western Lights of Fayetteville.
Yeah, made for some good pictures.
Yeah, and if you follow Ozarks at Large on Twitter, there are a couple that I put up. One that's got the what it looked like in the stadium, just bathed in this creepy, eerie green light.
Mm-hmm.
So no Northern Lights, sorry.
Interesting night in Fayetteville. Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah.
Interesting night in Fayetteville is coming up soon. The Dr. Lonnie Smith Trio will have two shows at 7 and 9 on February 1st. And those tickets have gone on sale today. And you can go to waltonartcenter.org for more information.
Speaking of Walton Arts Center, the Ronnie Millsap concert, which was originally a Christmas concert, then just a regular concert, is now not a concert. not going to happen. He had to cancel his upcoming show at Walton Arts Center. And there's no plan now to reschedule.
Okay.
So not going to happen. You can call the box center for refunds or more information.
Exchanging your tickets and all
exactly.
that good stuff. Okay. And one more note. The number 11 University of Arkansas gymnastics team is set to start the 2014 season in a run for the NCAA championships for the eighth time in program history. The team will start the season in Barnhill Arena, hosting Western Michigan and Bridgeport at 7 o'clock tonight.
All right. Have you been to a gymnastics meet?
It's been a couple of years, but yes, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, pyrotechnics and loud and, you know, not a bad time.
No, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I need to go back. I also need to go to a basketball game. I realize it's been a long time since I've been to women's more recently, but I haven't been to a men's basketball game in a while.
Noon.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it.
All right. I think there are seats available.
Perfect.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Christina Thomas will join me Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks at Large at Sunday morning at 9. I'm all by myself on Monday at noon.
You are. And we'll be back together on Tuesday.
That is right. Have a great weekend.